This is Roger Bennett of Men in Blazers.
Hey, this is Alexi Lawless.
You're listening to the Mouths of the South podcast.
Mouths of the South podcast, right here on Dirty South Soccer.
Rock on.
Eat it up.
This is the Mouths of the South podcast.
You shut your mouth when you're talking to me.
The official Dirty South Soccer podcast.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
Talking all things Atlanta United FC.
Don't nobody understand the words that are coming out of your mouth, man.
We are
the Mouths of the South.
The South got something to say. That's all I got to say.
All right, everybody, what is up? We are back with another exciting episode of the Mouths of the South podcast. Sam Franco, Eric Quintana with you. We have some special guests that I'll get to here in just a minute. But for the first time ever, Eric and I are sitting in the same room.
I can touch you. I can feel
doing
you.
Doing this podcast. Please
I can hold your
me.
Hand. I can rub your curly hair and your
yes, my very
glorious
curly
beard.
Hair right now. Yeah, I'm looking like what's his face? Lucas Nogueira when he got drafted. I think he got drafted by the Mavericks, got traded to the Hawks, and then ended up going to the Raptors. But everybody knows the picture I'm talking about, the giant Brazilian dude with the afro, and he tries to put the hat on over top, and it's very funny. That's what I look like right now because, well, I'm done working UGA sports for the year, so at this point I'm just like, whatever, until August comes around,
just let it all,
I can do whatever
all hang
I want.
Out, right?
Exactly.
Let it all hang out.
Plenty of different ways to get in touch with us, of course. Head over to DirtySouthSoccer.com, our home on the web. Also, the home for all things Atlanta United from the SB Nation Network. Follow on Twitter at DirtySouthSock. You can also follow us on Twitter at MOTSPodcast. Send us an email, MOTSPodcast@gmail.com. Individually on Twitter, I'm at Sam J. Franco. He's at Eric Quintana 47. Jason will return to us full-time soon as he is still getting his young child well-versed in the ways of being a human being.
Really, this one's on us because we're doing a live show in Atlanta and he's in Nashville.
That's so true.
It's not – we can't really do much about that.
No, I mean,
That's more on us and, you know, our exclusion of him than him having to deal with a baby.
Well, you know, we just got tired of him putting his baby before us. I mean, Jason, we're not asking too much of you here. Just forget about your baby and think about us. Is it really that hard? But anyway, Jason will be coming back full-time soon. Also, before we jump in today, I wanted to send a very, very special thank you to our man Conrad Burry. You all know him from some of the cool Atlanta United concept kits that we've seen. Well, if you've been living under a rock, I'm assuming if you're listening to us right now, that means that you've seen our awesome new logo. So, Conrad, major props to you. This logo is everything we hoped for and everything we wanted it to be, and it really looks cool.
Yeah, so job well done. We'll say if you're looking for a logo, if you're looking to make a logo, hit up Conrad because he will hook you up and he'll definitely treat you right.
We were pretty much on the same page. I mean, we gave him some ideas, and he came back with something, and I think we made like one tweak to his original thing, and then boom, we had what we wanted. So very awesome from Conrad. So we're very stoked about the new logo, and thank you, Conrad, for designing such an awesome logo for us. All right, time to get to the business at hand today. We are joined in studio by the three men behind U.S. Soccer Feed. It's at U.S. Soccer Feed on Twitter. Andrew Marsh, Aaron Anthony, and William Orr. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us to talk some U.S. soccer today.
Thank you for inviting us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, man, thanks.
Go ahead and introduce yourselves, guys. I mean, so we know your voices, so we know who is talking when they're talking, and just how you got together, how you guys started this U.S. Soccer Feed Twitter account.
All right, I'm William.
This is Andrew.
My name's Aaron. So it was about right before the U.S.-Nigeria game in Jacksonville in 2014, those games that were leading up to the World Cup. And me and William kind of have a habit of tweeting way too much about sports. Some of our followers on our like main account started to get a little upset with us. So we just had this idea because we were going to be at the game. We could like live tweet it, have pictures and stuff. We were like, you know, it'd be cool if we started a Twitter account. And at the time, it was just kind of us for us to have fun with, for us to just not annoy people with. And so we started it, and then we got a decent amount of followers from that game just being around. We had a few pictures that were from the game, got a few retweets and stuff, and we were like, you know what, this is actually really fun. So we started doing this going into the World Cup, did it throughout the World Cup. We tweeted, I think we live tweeted almost every single game that summer.
And, over 2,000 tweets.
Jeez.
Yeah. That was all. Like that. Yeah, it was all over just that one tournament. And we obviously, when you tweet that much, you're going to get followers. You're going to see we got a very good follower base. Like people were interacting with us, and we started having a lot of fun with it. So from there, we just kind of at this point, it was still me and William. And from that point, we just decided to keep growing it. We started tweeting about MLS. We started tweeting about everything that was happening with the national team, women's national team, and then we all started coaching at a school down in South Georgia in Albany, and this was still me and William, and then Andrew started coaching for the girls' team, and we kind of started talking together. We just found out we all really liked soccer. We liked the U.S. We liked the same European team, who I'll leave out just to leave out the bias for right now.
The Arsenal.
There you go. So that happened, and we started getting a group message with Andrew, and he's like, hey, we have this Twitter page that we started running, and he's like, would you like to get involved with that? And Andrew said, yeah. So we started doing that, and this has been, what, over 2 years ago now? Yeah. So, yeah.
I mean, you guys have amassed over 5,000 followers at this point. And what I like about you guys is that it's not so much about trying to break. There's a lot of these Twitter feeds that follow either the team or the league, or like MLS transfers, for example, is one of the worst transfer rumor Twitter accounts of all time. But you guys aren't like that. You guys really, it's a way for you guys to express your opinions without really, I guess, putting your name behind it, but at the same time, recognizing that it's a legitimate opinion. It's not something that you're just throwing out there just to throw out there.
Exactly.
Some of these other guys are just looking to create controversy or, you know, has some ridiculous hot take that has no bearing. It's just something that you guys are trying to not even grow. It's just something that happened naturally, right?
We try to create conversation.
There you go. Debate.
And, you know, that's all you can really ask for when you're talking about a topic. Thank you, Sam, for remembering English. When you're talking about a topic that can be as divisive as not just the U.S. national team, but national teams in general, you know, the U.S. doesn't have as, you know, big of a player field or as deep of a player field to choose from as maybe some other countries. But that doesn't mean that it isn't any more controversial when players are called up or not called up, and we'll definitely get into the Copa America roster here in vast detail very soon. But first, we wanted to dive into yesterday's game. You know, USA fielded a very experimental roster taking on Puerto Rico, who, if we're all sitting in here being honest, some of us didn't even know had a team. And the fact that they do have one, they're kind of like when you see like the Catalonian side play. They'll like take on Spain or something in like a friendly, but they're not actually recognized by FIFA as their own institution. So when you see something like a USA play a Puerto Rico, it's certainly interesting, except for the fact that the game yesterday wasn't very interesting.
Not at all. I mean,
it was good for a Sunday afternoon nap if you really want to win.
That's pretty much what it turned out to be, because I remember I was sitting there watching it like, what is this? Like, why am I sitting here watching? And the roster, you knew you had Brad Guzan play keeper in the first half, and he was replaced by Tim Howard. You also had, you know, guys that are definitely very much on the fringe in terms of, I think, Jurgen Klinsmann plans going forward. But he's got to check out some of these guys, obviously. You know, an Alejandro Bedoya starts for the USA yesterday, a guy that for some reason just keeps getting looks by Jurgen Klinsmann when he just hasn't really. I don't necessarily think it's his fault. I just don't think Klinsmann knows where to play him.
I think it's just like his positioning. I mean, he plays Wells for Nantes in France. Like, mm-hmm. He plays week in, week out. He's pretty good. And then when he comes into our system, it's just we don't really have a system that fits him. If maybe as an outside man in a diamond midfield. But other than that, where are you going to play him? Are you going to put him like outside in a 4-3-3? Or are you going to put him at a 10? Like, where do you put him? And Klinsmann really hadn't figured that out since he's had Bedoya. We have such a good player, and it's just kind of where do you put him?
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And just, I guess my main question, we don't want to spend too much time on this because this lineup doesn't impact what they're going to do in the Copa America. So anything stand out to you guys from yesterday?
Well, I'll just point something out. Watching the second half was kind of interesting, seeing some of these young guys. And I actually tweeted it out that it is kind of frustrating seeing some of the young talent that we have coming up and then realizing that they won't get an opportunity to showcase their skills at a big tournament like the Olympics. So that was a bit of a frustration watching that. But there, but the good news is there is a lot of talent there available. Watching guys like Emerson Hyman, even Julian Green. I know some people have sort of written him off recently, but you know, someone like him is. Those are good things to watch when you're when you have the young talent pool, like that was on display yesterday with against Puerto Rico.
I'm glad you brought up Julian Green because that's obviously a pretty polarizing fixture, you know, polarizing name in U.S. soccer circles at this point. Almost, I know Freddie Adu never scored a goal in a World Cup, you know, knockout round game, but. It's starting to kind of feel like that a little bit where you had all this hype right at the beginning and everybody's like, this guy's going to be the savior of U.S. soccer. And, you know, Green has spent some, you know, he got loaned out to Hamburg, couldn't really get any time there. So he spent this season at Bayern, again, really not getting time other than in the reserves. So he's a guy who I think has a lot of potential and a lot of talent. You don't score a goal the way he did in a World Cup game against a class side in Belgium and not have talent. I just think he hasn't been in the best position being at Bayern Munich at his age. I know he's got the skill, like I said, but it's been very detrimental to his career just because he's not getting minutes in meaningful games and high-pressure scenarios.
Well, even watching him yesterday, it was kind of funny because I was sitting there like, man, you can kind of see the talent in mm-hmm. him, and you can see what Klinsmann and everyone hyped up, but he almost comes across as lazy, to me at least. I kind of get the vibe where he's not – really challenging himself too much on the flank. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of like, I'm just going to go through the motions. I know I'm better than these guys, so just kind of going to do a few step overs and then put a ball in. And you see it with relative ease, but at the same time, it's like, you know, you got to put that take that next step mm-hmm. so we can really see what you're all about.
Him not doing that against a team like Puerto Rico, wouldn't that tell you something about him as the player, though? Because I would think that, you know, if he's got that kind of skill, if he's not just going through the motions, you know, he'd be balling out to score a hat trick if he could in the whatever limited time that he was in and try to impress that route by that route. I mean, just to go through the motions in a game like that, he's not going to do himself any favors. So why as Clemson would you want I don't know. I'm trying to get in his mind because I don't understand.
Yeah, what? Why
wouldn't he ball out?
No, I get it. And maybe that's a lot to do with the birthright path that we've kind of given him, like, oh, he's going to be the next savior, he's going to be the next star. So he never, I guess, maybe he never
that
thought
Freddie
he
Adu
had
effect.
To. Yeah, it was like, okay, well, once I've been given this path, which, by the way, was never given to him at Bayern Munich, so maybe that's why he's struggling over there, is they'll push him to the side. They'll throw him away quicker than anybody.
Yeah, they don't care about him. I mean, the Bayern Munich gives absolutely zero bleeps about the future of U.S. soccer. They could care less. So having him there, I just think, has been very detrimental. I think, I don't know if MLS would be the answer, but I feel like he needs to go somewhere. Honestly, I could see him doing wonders in, like, the Dutch league, like playing for, like, one of those teams, a PSV or something like that, and really getting into one of those systems where it's attack, 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 and he can be highlighted and showcased. I know Bayern is attack, attack, attack as well, but he's also got, you know, Frank Ribery, Arjen Robben, you know, Thiago Alcantara. He's got, you know, world-class players in front of him. Yeah, exactly.
You really do wonder where he could be if maybe we hadn't put the hype on him, because, I mean, that's what we do as U.S. soccer fans. We hype in any single player
yes,
who
we do.
Does anything. I mean, let me look at Pulisic right now. I mean, he's played pretty well for Dortmund, and we haven't really even seen much of him. I mean, most U.S. fans have seen a few games of him. I mean, the same thing happened with Jordan Morris. He scored the goal against Mexico. Everybody thought it was great. He's didn't play very well for the Sounders for a few games at the beginning of the season. Everybody already writes him off.
I thought Charlie Davies was going to be the next Thierry Henry, personally. So, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. We do this all the time.
Well, and it helps to for these kids to develop more organically. Like, look at a Zelalem over at Arsenal. Mm-hmm. I mean, most Americans really didn't know who he was, and they still don't really follow him too much. He doesn't have that hype, that same microscope on him like a Julian Green did, because he wasn't invited to a World Cup over, mm-hmm. you know, Landon Donovan. But, you know,
well, Wando shouldn't have gone over Donovan, but yeah.
But the point remains, and even looking at Hyman, you know, he's kind of doing his thing over at Fulham, and you see the progression with these guys, and it, like I said, it's done more organically as opposed to kind of just pushed and forced on a guy like Julian Green.
Here's the thing with, like, Julian Green, he was at Bayern Munich, and obviously he's never going to play at Bayern Munich. Nope. Not recently, especially at the age he was.
I think he got into a Champions League like group stage game this year, and like that was like it, and it was a game that they were already winning like dramatically. So it's like, oh, he got in the Champions League game, and like the 85th minute, and they're winning 8-0. You know,
yeah, like when he had that loan at Hamburg. Like, I wonder if maybe the hype wouldn't have got to his head so much. Would he have, like, denied? Wouldn't it, like, he denied a U21 game or something like that?
He's
like,
he didn't want to play for their B team.
Right. Yeah. And it's like, no. It's like, what? He hasn't really done anything to prove himself yet, so how are you going to deny a team? Like, you're not playing for your first team. Do you not want to play soccer? Do you have too much pride to play for Hamburg? And granted, he did play eventually and scored a pretty good goal, which that's the last goal I remember him scoring at the point. I mean, it makes you wonder if that height wouldn't have got to his head, would he be in the same position he is today?
And he's, what, 20, 21 years old?
Yeah.
And he's still 145 pounds soaking wet.
Right.
You know, at some point, he's going to have to grow up physically.
Yeah, get bigger.
Not only mentally, you know.
Yeah, because, I mean, not everybody can be that small like Leo Messi and be that good. You know, he's going to get bossed around. He's going to get, you know, he doesn't have that skill to be able to be that small, you know. So he's got, like you said, I think he's got to get bigger. Again, not obviously not necessarily taller. You're not growing taller. But, yeah, he's got to get more stout, more thick.
So going back to the actual Puerto Rico game, was anything impressive in that game or was it all? Because I was not impressed by anything. I wasn't impressed by the score. I wasn't impressed by the goals. I wasn't impressed by how long it took them to really get their first chance.
Wasn't impressed by the pitch. That thing was
nothing.
Terrible.
There was nothing impressive about that game. If I'm Klinsmann, I'd leave that game. I learned nothing. I learned absolutely nothing. But Bobby Wood had one great run, and that was it. And that
you're
was
right. Bobby Wood's
but,
run.
But
was
here's
right.
the thing.
Right.
But here's the thing. That's not going to happen against any other team.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't Klinsmann say beforehand that we probably couldn't take anything tactically away from this game?
He did, but then why schedule the game?
Yeah, I mean,
I don't understand why you even scheduled the game at that point. If you're not going to take anything away from playing a team like this, if you're trying to showcase the guys that you're thinking about calling up in the future, why not showcase them against someone that is at least some kind of a challenge?
It really did look like even the first teamers that had solidified their spots and in the roster, they all kind of just, They looked very bored. Like, I mean, it kind of showed because I was bored. I think most everybody watching was pretty bored. And I think it was kind of – they just kind of went through the motions and just – it was just a basically a glorified practice, a scrimmage.
I'll throw this out there too because I mentioned the pitch. I don't know if a lot of guys were going full tilt because you could kick a ground pass, you know, from point A to point B, one that would normally should just roll along the ground. And there were patches in that turf where it was just popping up and down. It looked like popcorn popping when the ball was slid along that pitch.
But again, it goes back to show how much did U.S. soccer and Klinsmann actually care about this game? If you knew you had that, the state of the pitch, you had the whole Zika virus thing.
Oh.
You have the fact that it's Puerto Rico. Why not move that? If nothing else, move that game into the United States and actually get a good playing surface. Don't worry about Zika. You know, if you can get a team that's actually worth playing, I mean, it just seems rather thrown together.
Well, maybe it was a warm-up in a sense for that game in Santa Clara where they're going to be playing Colombia in the first game in the Copa America for them, because that field is widely regarded as being crap. And I'm talking about from an NFL perspective.
Wait, which field is it?
The one in Santa Clara. And it's
the
a 49ers. Brand new stadium. I mean, it's a 49 Levi Stadium. It's a brand new stadium. Very nice. But the field has been, at least for its first few years of existence, I mean, I think they've had to replace it like twice. So that hasn't gone very well for them. So maybe that was just Klinsmann's way of saying, hey, we're going to play on a crappy pitch in our first game, so we might as well get used to it and play on a crappy one now. That's all I got. I don't know.
I heard something about playing in the heat. Going down to Puerto Rico, playing in the heat.
Oh, you could have done that here.
The Colombians are going to be ready, though.
Yeah, but you could have done that here. You could have done that in the United States.
Oh, well, I'm trying to justify.
That's us trying to justify Klinsmann's dumb decisions. I mean,
I mean, you're right about that. Okay, so back to the game again. Here's another thing I wasn't impressed with. The way they got their goals. Bobby's Wood goal was, in terms of just the skill set, of Bobby Wood, it looked great.
It was a speed, though.
Now,
it was just
now you take in consideration who was against, and you know you realize not that great. But all the goals, it was nothing in the run of play. It was Bobby Wood's was, but it was you still had that one goal from who was the one that just tapped it in?
Ream.
Paul Ariola.
Ariola.
Yeah,
I thought Ream was
on. His was off a rebound.
Whatever.
Right. Ream was the first goal. That
Bobby
was
Bobby yeah, yeah. Woods, I'll give him credit for, but still, it's against Puerto Rico. And then what was the other? What was the
Ariola's
other?
Ariola's tap in.
And what was the other one that I'm thinking of?
That's right. You had Ream and Ariola had the tap in goals, and then yeah, you had the one with Bobby Wood where he just he was just faster than their back.
How do you not? How do you not create more chance? More.
The thing is,
how do you not score more on actual runs of play? On actual,
really didn't have that much midfield play in general because we saw the space in front of the fullbacks. I mean, Deidre Yedlin probably ran more in that game than he has in, like, forever. I mean, they kept playing it wide, and, I mean, there's only so much we're going to do when we keep playing it wide. We're going to play to, I mean, it could be where Puerto Rico is not as good technically as we are. We kept playing physically because we didn't want to play technically, I guess. And, well, one thing I do want to mention about Bobby Wood's goal is you keep saying it was just speed. However, when he gets that, receives that ball, he does a very good job of getting in position between him and the Puerto Rican defender and actually holding the defender off so he can get that chip in. Because if it's just a speed race, the Puerto Rican defender was right on him. But he does a very good job of positioning his body where he can have that finish.
Was that the one with the pass from midfield?
Right.
Yes. I don't think that pass ever happens against a real team.
Correct.
No.
That's where I'm like, yeah, great on Bobby Wood for putting together a great goal. But I don't think against any other team that pass actually happens.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't remember who was starting in the midfield, but did we have any sort of creative, like, attacking midfielders, or was it
other than Bedoya?
It was Kitchens, Williams, Bedoya, and Morales.
And Morales was playing closer to number 10 than the other ones. But
that's another question I have with a guy like Danny Williams. We all remember that cracker of a goal he scored when the USA got those improbable wins against Germany and the Netherlands kind of out of nowhere. And
which,
yeah,
by
Williams,
the way, we called those. Yeah, we called
them. Of course you did.
Somewhere on Twitter we called it.
Yeah, we're like, oh, we're going to beat those teams.
Go look it up.
That are playing like C-squad lineups. And
it was sarcastic, but hey.
Well, of course. Hey, no, that's the thing. If it's sarcastic at the time, you don't claim that afterwards.
In the Germany game, we actually started something that we now call like the Bobby Wood curse because we were talking so bad about Bobby Wood in that game. And, I mean, at that time, he really hadn't done much, to be honest. But we were talking so bad about him in that game, and all of a sudden he scores the winner, and we're like, okay, that just happened.
Well, now you just have to keep talking crap about Bobby Wood.
Oh, that's exactly what happened. Like, we did it again in the Holland game, which I can't remember which one was first. But then later we did it with Yedlin, talking about how bad he had been, and then he has an assist to win a game later, and we're like, yep, that's the Bobby Wood curse.
But, yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, a guy like Danny Williams, and this is my biggest problem with Klinsmann's squad rotation and selection right now, is that you'll see a guy like a Danny Williams have a good game or two, and then you won't see him again until this game. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, definitely getting more of that when we actually get to the roster talk. But, I mean, you see, he's played very well for the United States, and it's not like he's played very bad for us at all.
And he's not in the 30, so, you know.
Of course not. And speaking of the 30, we'll jump to that right now. We are, of course, talking about the U.S. soccer squad for the Copa America Centenario that will be this summer all throughout the United States. I'm very excited as I'll be seeing games, as I mentioned earlier, the USA-Colombia game.
Have you seen what Ted calls
Santa Clara? What's that?
The Copa America Pretendario.
Oh, gosh. That sounds like a very Ted thing to say.
Yeah, I just thought it was funny. I mean, I don't agree, but I thought it was funny.
But, yeah, I'm also very excited for the Ecuador-Brazil match I'll be seeing in the Rose Bowl, which we'll get to Ecuador-USA here in a little bit, and how my heart gets ripped in half every time I have to watch those two teams play each other. But more importantly right now, the 30-man roster for the United States. Obviously some glaring omissions. Did I say 30? What is wrong with me? The 23-man roster. I don't.
Well, there would probably be some glaring omissions on a 30-man
roster.
How
about this?
As well.
The 30-man was provisional, and then they cut it down to 23. That's where my head was at. Sorry, guys. The 23-man roster for the Copa America Centenario. Some glaring omissions, as we said. The biggest one, obviously, Jordan Morris. A guy that has such a huge deal has been made about him, and how Klinsmann was very eager to play him in the beginning of his, time, I guess, as a not a professional, but he was coming on for the U.S. when he was still playing at Stanford, and it seemed like, oh, Klinsmann really likes this kid. Now Klinsmann's leaving him off the 23-man roster for the Copa America.
It's because of his decision to go to MLS.
Well, I'm aware
I guarantee
of that.
You, that's it.
Well, the problem there is though, and look, I I think we've talked about this in the podcast before. I was one that wanted him to stay at Werder Bremen because I think that obviously a German development system is better than an American one at this point. That's just true. That's not like talking crap about MLS.
You hear him in interviews, and it's so obvious why he didn't go. It's because he was going to be homesick.
Yep.
That's the only reason he stayed.
What is it with U.S. soccer players? And Donovan went through the same thing at Bayer Leverkusen.
Every interview, it's just new language in a foreign country, and I have to figure out how to live there, and you know, I have all my family in Stanford.
I'm sorry, at 21 years old, if I'd had the opportunity to go live in Germany, I definitely would have done that. But yeah, it's just that's a glaring omission. Just really quick before we jump to you guys, just some things that I have about it. I'm kind of tired of seeing Graham Zuzi on U.S. soccer rosters at this point. Like, he's a fine player in MLS, but
yeah, what position is he?
Other than sending
he's a midfielder. Other than
sending Mexico to the World Cup, which I will never forgive him for. I mean, what has he done for U.S. soccer?
Yeah, I've never been much of a fan of Zuzi. He's a lot like Mix Diskerud in my mind. Like, I just
bite your tongue. I'm just kidding. I'm a Mix apologist. I apologize for being a Mix apologist. But yes, yeah, so, no, but yeah, continue.
I nothing really excites me. I guess he's a steady player, but I don't know what he gives you per se.
Right.
I mean, I guess Klinsmann trusts him. I mean,
and that's what I think you've got more than anything with this roster. It's just there's a lot of the same old, same old. I really wish that Klinsmann would, I don't want to say grow a pair, but a guy like you. Look, I'm not. I don't know if I'm saying leave Clint Dempsey off, but you know what I mean. Like, what has Clint Dempsey done in the last year to justify even his selection over a guy like Jordan Morris? Dempsey, quite frankly, has been pretty crap.
Well, really, since he scored the goal against Ghana, I mean, you can go back to that. And he's getting old.
He is.
You know,
he is.
Love him to death, but he's getting old.
Should we just break this down position by position?
I think that sounds very good.
So,
idea. Organize this.
Goalkeepers, Brad Guzan, Tim Howard, and I don't even know how to pronounce this guy's name. It's cutoffs here. And
Ethan Horvath.
Yeah, there you go.
Horvath, yeah.
Are you guys surprised that Brad Guzan is number one?
I mean, I'm not necessarily surprised about it just because of the whole Tim Howard sabbatical thing. And Tim Howard, like, going into it, Tim Howard said that he didn't necessarily expect to be the number one when he came back. Obviously, we were all expecting Brad Guzan to have done it a lot better in the past year, especially with Aston Villa. I mean, he didn't even end up starting by the end of that season. And I mean,
and they did get relegated, too.
Exactly. So. I mean, you look at it, and if Brad Guzan was where we think he would be, we all expected him to be the number one for this whole cycle. But it's just that, like, Brad Guzan has not been as good. Now, neither is Tim Howard. I mean, obviously, he wasn't starting for Everton by the end of the season. They didn't get relegated, obviously. But, I mean, it's not necessarily a huge surprise, but it's kind of a wondering what happened to our keepers.
Is it like a, you know, he's the best of the worst?
In a way, yeah.
Because,
been crap. I mean, Howard was crap this year at Everton. Guzan's been crap this year. It's kind of like you just said, picking, all right, well, we have three steaming piles of crap beer. Which one smells the best?
I look at some of the goalkeepers in MLS, and I know there's a thing with, especially with goalkeepers, where you have to have a consistent presence on a team, especially a national team. Got to have someone in the back that's done it before, that knows what he's doing. You have a lot of this talent in MLS that's actually goalkeeper talent in MLS that's actually doing a good job, better than basically a bench relegated Guzan and Tim Howard.
Well,
and a guy none of us
trust.
Have ever seen.
It's like what they were saying earlier. It's like Klinsmann is so scared to pick players that I guess he doesn't trust that, of course, he's going to go with these guys. He's not going to take a chance on one of these young MLS keepers because he's scared. Well, that's what it seems like to me.
Well, if I were playing, doing the cup half full.
Playing Klinsmann's advocate here.
Yes. I mean, you know that the talent is in Guzan. You know the talent's in Howard. So it's not, I don't remember Tim Howard, and maybe I'm wrong. I don't remember Tim Howard being on form like he was at the World Cup prior to the World Cup.
That's true.
I mean,
he was good, but he wasn't that good.
Right.
Here's the thing. Belgium also shot the ball right at him, like 16 times. It's not hard to save a ball that you're standing there for anyway.
Right. And I guess, you know, I even remember last year watching Guzan in the Gold Cup, and I was like, what happened to this guy?
Yeah.
Like, he, because I remember there were calls for Guzan to start over Howard even at the last World Cup.
Which sounds asinine to me. I mean, I think both at their best, even though Howard's older, he's still the better keeper.
Right. But and I guess that kind of speaks to Guzan, like the expectations people had for him, and like he's looked awful. I remember the Jamaica game, like there were a couple two goals that they scored. I felt like he should have stopped or at least made a better play on him.
Yeah, and the Jamaica game. I didn't want to talk about
that. That was a lot of fun.
All right, should we move to defenders?
Yes, please. Let's not talk about the Jamaica game.
Matt Beisler, Steve Birnbaum, John Brooks, Jeff Cameron, Timmy Chandler. Why, hey. I don't know. Fabian Johnson, Michael Orozco, DeAndre Yedlin. If you guys had to set up a back four right now, assuming that they play a back four, which is a strong assumption.
I was gonna say they played some 3-5-2 against Puerto Rico. So.
But assuming they have a you know they're playing four in the back. How do you guys set them up right now?
I mean, the biggest point. I mean, the thing is we don't necessarily have a natural left back here, so you're gonna guess that Fabian Johnson goes there at this point. I mean, I guess Timmy Chandler could theoretically end up over there too, but we don't really want him there, so I'm gonna put Fabian Johnson there. I mean, I would probably start Beisler and Cameron in the middle, even though I am.
Oh, you don't like John Brooks?
I do kind of like John Brooks.
Well, Cameron can play some. I mean, I know that you've got Yedlin back there, but Cameron's versatility is that he can play really anywhere across the back line, which, I mean, again, he's not a left back, but he's probably better than, you know, putting Timmy Chandler back there.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely wouldn't mind putting Jeff Cameron out outside back. I know, like, for Stoke, he was more of a right back. And, I mean, he is right footed. I mean, he theoretically could play left back, but it does make me wonder why in the world do you not bring a left back, like a natural left back?
Well,
Tim Ream. You had Eric Lehigh. I mean, even the guy that Kellen Acosta has played left back for Dallas before. At least he's played there before.
Yeah, okay. I was going to say, he's not really a left back.
Oh, yeah, I mean, he's a defensive mid, but at least he has played there before. I mean, we're bringing him into the Ecuador game instead of Timmy Chandler, so I guess that's where he sees him at. But, I mean, and then a right back, I'm probably going to put Yedlin, because, I mean, as much as we talk about that Puerto Rico game, he didn't do anything bad, and he actually put in some good crosses.
Well, I mean, I'm excited to see what he looks like against a team. Yeah, I'm excited to see how well he's developed. You know, if his development at Sunderland translates to the U.S. men's national team.
Oh, yeah, you can't understate 23 starts in the Premier League. That's for a guy like Yedlin, that'd be huge.
Yeah, and I mean,
he's the reason they didn't go down, basically.
Well, I mean, by all accounts,
by all accounts, at the end of the season, he was the reason they didn't. He was one of the big reasons they didn't go down.
And that Sunderland are always guaranteed to somehow stay up every year, but that's kind of their birthright.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, you got teams like that, and you know, Newcastle and Aston Villa, mainstays, just getting relegated. You're like, no, we're Sunderland, we got this. But I do have a question for you guys. You mentioned Fabian Johnson, and it's almost like, do we have to play him back here because we don't have a better option? I personally think Fabian Johnson is the best player the USA has right now.
I agree with that. At least technically he's the best.
That's what
player.
I'm saying. Like overall, just pound for pound, he's the best player on this roster. And having him at, you know, a fullback position is detrimental to you as a team because of how good he is in the midfield and how good he is going forward and putting in crosses and scoring goals. So having him back there, while you might have to do it out of necessity, limits you offensively in what you can do.
Right. And you look at a team like Austria, who has David Alaba. He plays either, I mean, depending on what formation Bayern are playing, he's going to play in the defense, either left back or one of those third center backs. And you look at Austria, they play him in the central of midfield every game because he is that good. I don't understand why we don't do that with Fabian Johnson. I mean, he's played midfield for us, and I mean, he can play, that's where he plays for Mönchengladbach.
You're forgetting, Klinsmann is smarter than you.
Oh, yeah. He obviously.
Whoops.
Yeah, how dare you? but no, I just think that having him there in the defense, as much as you might need him, is just detrimental. And in the left back position, we've seen this coming. They had DeMarcus Beasley playing left back. Yeah. It's like, why didn't you prepare for that? It's almost like Beasley was just put in there like the you know, the old story of the Dutch kid putting his finger in the dam. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, you knew this was going to happen. Like, DeMarcus Beasley wasn't going to be able to be your left back forever.
Yeah, you pulled out of retirement twice.
You just wait till Breck Shea turns the corner.
Yeah, how long have we been waiting for that now?
Orlando City fans would want to kill us for that one.
Yeah,
but
right.
They want to do that anyway. So
it happens.
here's just looking at it now. You got Kyle. Moving on to the midfield. Are we done with the defenders?
Well,
other than our frustration, yeah, I think.
There's the thing. Me and William last night were talking, and just trying to get into the head of Jurgen Klinsmann, which can be a very, very dangerous thing to start to do.
Yeah, I was about to say, I apologize. It's like being John Malkovich.
It was rough. It was really rough.
But I'm going to let William get into it. But we started looking at the players that we have, the players that he called up, and there's a certain formation that we could possibly see them going in where players fit a lot more naturally.
It's a 3-5-2.
Right. And
they did run it a little bit against Puerto Rico.
But here's the thing. You know the first thing you're going to hear, though, and I'll let you finish, but the first thing you're going to hear is, why the hell are we experimenting against really good teams?
It's Jurgen Klinsmann.
Here's the thing. If you remember, we did the same thing in the World Cup. We played – I don't remember what we were playing. We were playing a diamond or 4-3-3 before the World Cup. We played that 4-3-2-1 for the entire World Cup. So it's not like he's scared of changing formation right before a major tournament. We didn't play that 4-3-2-1 in any of the leadoff games. Then all of a sudden comes – I think it was Portugal when we started playing it. And all of a sudden, yeah, we're just going to completely change formation.
I mean, it does kind of make sense. You could get your three best center backs on the field with Brooks, Cameron, and Beisler. Probably Brooks would most likely be the center back.
Mm-hmm.
You got Cameron, who's pretty agile. You got Beisler, who's really fast, could play the two outsides.
Yep.
You split the baby with Fabian Johnson, let him play defense, but let him still get forward. DeAndre Yedlin would be in a better position for himself also. You get to play all three of the central mids that he likes to play, because you basically have the two defensive mids in Jermaine Jones and Kyle Beckerman. You get to play Bradley a little bit higher and have two forwards. It makes sense. It's probably not going to happen, but it
sounds
good.
Who are the two forwards you would play in that formation?
You'd probably have Dempsey as one of them, and then
probably
either Bobby Wood or Zardes to have some type of pace going forward. So, I mean...
Now you pissed off the Darlington Nagby. Fans.
Yeah, that's another problem.
Here's the thing, we're looking at Nagby as a striker, though.
Maybe.
Nagby?
No, he'd be at the 10.
He'd be at the 10. And
that's what I'm saying.
But there is no 10.
Klinsmann doesn't really, he hasn't really barely started Nagby at all for whatever reason. So, I mean, if it's me, I put Nagby in and I build that team around him. Mm-hmm. Of course, I can't do that necessarily from this roster. If I really looked at it, maybe I could, but... I disagree with those roster choices in that aspect. I put Nagby there first. But if we're looking at what Klinsmann would possibly do if this were the case, he's not going to put Nagby in, I don't think. I mean, I don't know if he's going to put Nagby in our regular formation when we get to that.
See, if that's what you're thinking, I would put Nagby instead of Michael Bradley.
Or move Bradley back.
Well, I've been advocating for
and pull out one of the...
Probably Beckerman.
Either Beckerman or Jermaine Jones.
That makes sense. Yeah,
I don't know why he brought three defensive midfielders. I
don't ask
Bradley a defensive midfielder.
But that's the thing, though. The problem with Bradley is Klinsmann switches where he plays him. You know, he'll have him kind of right there next to a Beckerman or somebody in the defensive midfield. And the next game, he'll have him further up. And listeners of this podcast and people from Dirty South Soccer will know that I think it's about time we move on from a guy like Michael Bradley, just because I don't see it anymore. I really don't. He turns the ball over too much.
I see.
His passes have gotten bad.
I would just the only problem with that is who are you going to replace him with?
Well, Nagby. That's what I'm saying. I think Nagby's a better player right now.
Nagby is a better attacking midfielder than Bradley is. Right. I think Bradley is a number six.
Okay, I'll give you that. I'm just saying I don't see a starting 11 where you couldn't put Michael Bradley in for one of the midfielders. Do you think he's better than a Jermaine Jones?
No, not technically, not skill wise. I think Jermaine
what about
Jones
Kyle
is
Beckerman?
I think he's better than Kyle Beckerman.
So I think he's better.
I think playing them next to each other, where you can you allow Jermaine Jones to go up, and then Bradley is just naturally going to sit back because that just seems to be what he likes to do.
He did very well for a while at Roma, playing in that six where he just sits right in front of the back four. I mean, I could see it. I just don't think Jurgen Klinsmann sees him as that.
Well, of course he doesn't. But I think the big problem is when he is so invested in Michael Bradley. He is so invested in Michael Bradley that he just won't stray away from him, and I just feel like
it's that trust thing again.
Again, it was to go back to the trust. You're exactly right, and I just feel like personally, I think that you're right. Bradley is better than Beckerman, but at the same time, if you have, say, Jermaine Jones and Beckerman next to each other and you let Jones go forward a little more and then Nagby also kind of in that role, Beckerman is way more likely to stay back. I feel like Bradley would be too tempted to creep forward and get out of position.
Oh, see, I think Bradley's disciplined enough to where he wouldn't do that. I think he would hope so. He plays that position knowing Jermaine Jones is going up.
Yeah,
knowing he's not going to be a defensive midfielder.
In the small sample size I did watch at Roma, he did do that very well. I mean, again, it's a completely different situation, but he, from what I saw, I thought he did it pretty well.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves, so let's go over who the midfielders actually are. Kyle Brekkerman, Alejandro Bedoya, Michael Bradley, Jermaine Jones, Perry Kitchen, Darlington Nagbe, Christian Pulisic, and is that it? Graham Zusi.
Right, one thing I do want to mention about as far as a midfielder who got left off, we were talking about him earlier, Danny Williams.
Yeah.
I wonder why we just had this whole conversation about who our defensive mid could be. What is wrong with him? I mean, I wonder why, like, Beckerman is old at this point, and I understand that he feels comfortable with him, but at some point we have to move on. Don't get me wrong, I love Beckerman. What he did in the World Cup, how he just kind of changed the way we were able to play, and nobody saw it coming at all before that World Cup, was amazing. But it's been 2 years. Beckerman is getting up there now. At some point, we got to get ready to move on, or else we're going to get stuck in a situation where we have nobody there.
Now, to, I guess, to counter point your point, it is going to be a tough tournament if they even get through the group stage. I don't know if Danny Williams can take that kind of a brutal pounding.
I
don't remember him doing very well against.
That's an interesting point, and you know
we
keep obviously joking about the whole trust thing, and there is some validity to it. I mean, do you think that plays into, you know, not hindering someone's growth by basically exposing them to the Colombias or potentially a Brazil or someone like that, to where you don't kind of hinder or hurt their mental progress as much as like a Beckerman who, yeah, if he has a tough tournament, you know, so what? He can handle it. But you also trust him more than a Danny Williams or something like that.
Yeah, but you bring him, though. You bring him and get him that exposure so that it's not all at once, and he can take a little bit of that pressure, a little bit of that, you know, that battle against a tough opponent. Because I mean, that's eventually he's gonna have to get over that,
right?
And so you don't have to throw him into the fire all at once, but at least, you know, get him some playing time against quality opponents.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that he shouldn't have come. It was just kind of a thought that I had as to maybe.
Oh right, yeah, we know. You know, Beckerman and Jermaine Jones can take the pounding.
Right.
But you also know they're not going to be there very much longer.
Yeah, I mean, I understand not throwing somebody like, say, a Will Trapp into the fire starting with this tournament. But I feel like a guy like Danny Williams, he's, I mean, what is he, 25, 26? He's been starting for, or does he still play for Reading? Yeah, he's been starting for Reading for a few years now. He's been playing very well. And, I mean, he's a big boy. I think he could handle it even if he did get thrown in and say Colombia scores 3-4 on us. I mean, I could see him being fine because he's been around long enough for that.
He's 27. He has experience in both the Bundesliga and the championship. I mean, he's a big dude. At some point, it's either yes or no. And I feel like this is more of Jurgen Klinsmann saying, I don't rate him as a player. I mean,
here's the thing. Like, when you look at the Germany friendly, he scored, what, I think it was the third goal in that Germany friendly.
Beautiful.
It's not like he's played, hasn't played in bigger games for us. So,
it was,
I mean,
Holland, but... Yeah, good enough.
I think too that the I think that
who remember those games at this point?
I was gonna say. It's been a while.
I think that the Copa America too. I'm very intrigued to see how different countries are handling it because, you know, as much as a joke that Ted threw out there, the Copa America pretendario.
Well, yeah, because
he's
kind of
right. I mean, this tournament isn't the official Copa America. They did that last year. This isn't, you know, what does it mean? I mean, I know that it's probably the biggest tournament in terms of talent and in terms of a team we've seen in the USA since the 94 World Cup, but it still doesn't really mean anything.
As far as a squad selection for a lot of the CONMEBOL teams, like, they've picked their pretty strong lineups.
They have.
I mean, we'll see how they play, other than, like, you look at a Neymar who's going to the Olympics for reasons because of the World Cup and stuff, and they've never won Olympics, they want to do it at home.
Right.
But, I mean, you look at all the lineups they've picked their strongest lineups. I mean, obviously we'll see how they play, but it looks like these countries are coming to win. And mm-hmm. They're not just coming, they're not throwing like kind of how Jamaica and Mexico did last year during the Copa America. They kind of sent their second squads and they focus on the Gold Cup. These teams are bringing in their A teams.
No, they are, but I think what I was getting at is from the USA's perspective, why are you like putting so much in, putting all of these veteran guys, you know, through this. Honestly, if I were MLS, I'd be kind of mad. It's like, hey, this tournament propped up out of nowhere, and now if you're Toronto, we don't have Michael Bradley. If you're, you know, you're losing some of your players. So I just think that why are you hesitant to experiment? Like you meant Danny Williams. Why not throw him in there? This is a perfect opportunity to have some of your younger, untested players playing in games against, like you were just saying, some really good rosters.
I have a theory on this. One, or it could be a couple of things. One, because it is on home soil. And if you start experimenting with some of the younger players, mm-hmm. you leave yourself liable to get smacked around.
Of course, but and you also could get smacked around.
That's true. And then I guess it's maybe a send-off or a, you know, the last chance.
Last hurrah.
Yeah, kind of thing where, yeah, it'd be one thing if we send a bunch of young players, but I don't think the general public and the casual fan would
Where's Clint Dempsey?
Yeah, and then we get smacked around and people don't understand why we went with a younger lineup.
No, I understand. I just think that, you know, again, I know selling tickets is a big deal and everything, but if you're Jurgen Klinsmann, what's much more important than having all of your fans be happy with you right now? It's figuring out your team. Well, because if he is going to be the manager through the next World Cup, he's got a lot of work to do in the next 2 years. This squad, you know, going into the last World Cup and going into the 2010 World Cup, you look at those tournaments and the team was at this point in the cycle, those two teams looked way more prepared for a World Cup coming up in 2 years than this one does.
Oh, I agree completely. And are we really going to rely on two guys who are both going to be 36 years old to play central midfield?
I sure hope not.
Because at some point, we've got to look forward. And
that's why I'm really mad about Danny Williams and guys like that not getting a chance now, because this would be the perfect opportunity to do it.
I will say, this is a great roster to win right now. And when you've got the heat from the last couple friendlies and the Gold Cup and, you know, you want to at least get some results now. I know Alexi Lawless, for example, he's high on this roster because it's a great roster to win now. I truth be told, I don't really care about winning this tournament.
I don't care
either. I know that people will go nuts if we go 3-and-out. But still, I wish we had brought Danny Williams. I wish we had brought some guys that you knew you're developing for the future. Not necessarily to start them, but to get
I think a guy like Emerson Hyman would have been
Yeah. It'd be great.
What about Julian Green we were just talking about? I mean, you know, if these are going to be the guys for the future, then why aren't you putting them in? If this tournament is such a big deal, if other teams are bringing these really great squads, then why aren't you saying, well, then if these guys are the future, we should probably get them meaningful minutes? That's what I was talking about with Julian Green. Meaningful minutes in high-profile games. And you're not getting that playing in Puerto Rico. You're just not.
I mean, Hyman, if you really want to look at it, he's playing in the championship, which is going to be better than the vast majority of the players we picked.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's gotten, you know, two seasons under his belt starting every game for Fulham, I don't see why he's not ready physically, you know?
Here's the thing, Eric. You made the point that this is a good roster to win right now. We tried that in the CONCACAF Cup against Mexico. We've been playing some weird formations, different players. When I got to that CONCACAF Cup, we did put Beckerman, we put Jermaine Jones, we put these same players that we're talking about right now in, and I don't really want to talk about the CONCACAF Cup. It was that bad. And I mean, you look at it, and it's like he's already tried this to, okay, I'm going to pick what I know, and hopefully that'll get me through. When it did in the CONCACAF Cup, why are you going to try the same thing in the Copa America?
I'll just defend Klinsmann by saying this. You still are developing Bobby Wood. You still are developing you know, you obviously brought Christian Pulisic.
Zardes, still, he's pretty
You're
young.
Still developing Zardes. You've got those faces that you've seen for a while that you still are developing. So obviously it's good that he just hasn't abandoned them yet. But I think he had to balance winning now and developing the players he's still trying to develop before bringing in a new fleet of players, if you will. That's how I'll defend that.
But if you're trying to do both of those at the same time, why the hell is Jordan Morris not on this team?
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, I mean, what other options did he have? Josie's hurt. I mean, Josie would be on this team, but he's hurt. Wando is on the team. I mean, we don't have any other options besides the Bobby Wood and Christian Pulisic. Like, they are our best options, whether they're new or, like, he doesn't have old people to turn to at that point.
Can we go over the forwards real quick before
we get
into forward?
All right,
Clint Dempsey.
So let's do that.
Clint Dempsey, Wondolowski, Bobby Wood, and Jossie Sardes.
And look, I'm totally fine. And look, I get it. You know, Dempsey has big time tournament experience. I think you want that. You can't just bring a bunch of, you know, young kids that don't have any experience. You've got to have that mix. And I totally see having Dempsey in there. It's just more and more each passing game I watch him, my level of Dempsey appreciation goes down. And I think it's just because his body language and the way he's played, like you said, since that Ghana goal when he scored in the World Cup, everything's been bad. You know, his body language, whether he's playing for Seattle or the U.S. men's national team, he just doesn't seem to be in that, you know, kind of rah-rah Captain America type guy that we had from him earlier in his career. Now it's much more of a it almost seems like he's over it.
Yeah, and in all honesty, it kind of speaks to a bigger issue of the depth of the talent pool. You know, ordinarily, any other country has players that are pushing those guys out. 33, 34 years old, they're being pushed out. Mm-hmm. Dempsey is almost in the lineup, in the squad by default, just because he's still kind of one of our better options.
He is, and that's kind of sad. Like you were saying, it's kind of that we don't have other players developed to be ready to take that.
And maybe it is Dempsey just being like, okay, I'm kind of tired of this, but, you know, if I have to keep doing it, I guess I got to keep doing it.
Yeah. Well, he's getting paid an asinine amount of money in MLS, so.
I don't mind Dempsey because if there's anyone that you need to be a badass, he's the guy you want to bring along.
Of course.
Right? Yeah. Between him and Jermaine Jones, both of them on the field at the same time, no one's going to mess with you. So I do like that going into a cup that's going to be tough, that's going to be dirty.
Jeff Cameron does play for Stoke, so
not,
that's got to be something.
Not dirty in the sense that, you know, there's going to be dirty play, but it's just going to be tough to, you know, it's
a little bit of grit.
It's going to be an aggressive three games. You got to know what you're getting into. So I like that we have at least two badasses.
Well, and especially against Colombia, you're going to need that aggression for sure.
We're not going to just pass it around them. We're going to have to have the grit and maybe a little luck, you know.
Dempsey is probably our most CONCACAF player. Like, you look at some of these teams, like, some of the players, like, I mean, you look at some of the players in there, they're the ones who fall over, they're the ones who dive. And granted, Dempsey doesn't really dive, but he is the one who will complain to the ref. Mm-hmm. He was the one that was stuck in, not dirty, I mean, maybe a little bit.
Isn't this the guy that took the ref's book? Like, at one point,
and ripped it up. Yeah. Ripped it up.
Stole, I mean, yeah, so he totally hit the nail on the head with being CONCACAF-y. I love that term. That's one I'll have to steal. But I just... It's weird because with Landon Donovan, I never started feeling this way about him, and I don't know why. It might just be because, you know, I grew up rooting for him, I love Landon Donovan. I will always love Landon Donovan. When Klinsmann left him off the roster, I legit had to take a minute to compose myself because I was so upset. But it just feels like I never got this way. And, you know, Donovan obviously, you know, had his sabbatical, and he's always been – a flake, kind of, but
he's different,
right? But with Dempsey, it always seemed like Donovan actually cared about U.S. soccer, and I'm not saying Dempsey doesn't, but Dempsey has kind of more of the mercenary appeal.
He's,
you know,
less
what I
mean? Visual about it.
Well, he's robbing Seattle Sounders blind with that contract. I mean, for the amount of money he's making, he's one of the highest paid players in MLS. For what? I mean, I know Lampard is probably the worst contract we've ever seen signed in MLS history, but this contract that Dempsey's playing on right now for the return they're getting from it ain't great.
Yeah, and I mean, that's one of the reasons I love Jermaine Jones so much is he's 34 years old, but every single time he puts on the uniform,
full
it's,
tilt.
It's like it's his debut, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he's so CONCACAF-y. Like, he will break your leg if he has to.
Yes, he will.
And... I feel like, you know, he had or Instagram something saying age is only a number for him. But, like, for him, I actually believe it.
Oh, yeah.
Clint Dempsey is really – I feel like it's starting to hit him. But, you know, some players can get through.
Here's the thing with Donovan. It's almost like the effect of he quit while he was ahead. Like, he quit while he still had plenty to give because he was kind of getting tired of it, which is what happened. And it's what happened. So Donovan left at that point. Dempsey – if he left at that point, it might have been a few years ago. Maybe we would remember Dempsey like we remember Donovan, because Donovan kind of got screwed out of that World Cup. And
so Klinsmann kind of even made the legend of Landon Donovan even greater by leaving him off the roster.
Exactly. He turned him into a martyr.
That's what he did. It did.
Exactly.
We
see him as basically a legend. That's how we're always going to see him because that's how he left us. I mean, you look at Dempsey, whereas it's not like he's played.
No, Dempsey would still leave a legend.
Yeah, exactly.
But as long as he doesn't do anything stupid from here until the end of his career.
He's still probably.
But come on, you look at him ripping up the card or the ref's book in the Open
Cup.
That
was awesome.
And yeah, that's legendary stuff.
Oh, it is. Again, it's not like I'm saying Dempsey. It's the way we're talking about Dempsey right now. I don't remember talking about Donovan like this. The reason we're talking about Dempsey like this right now is because of that. I'm not saying we won't remember him as a legend, but because of the fact that he's almost like he doesn't care a little bit is the reason we're talking about him like this right now.
Oh, he'll never surpass. Like, Landon Donovan is the greatest American-born soccer player of all time. And Dempsey, I don't think there's anything he can do to overtake Landon on the Mount Rushmore of U.S. soccer. I mean, that's never going to happen because Landon Donovan scored the goal against Algeria. He scored the goals in the 2002 World Cup to help the USA get to the quarterfinals. You know what I mean?
He scored so much against Mexico.
And he did. I mean, and that's the thing. When I said Captain America earlier, Donovan was the embodiment of U.S. Mexico. He pissed on the Azteca, for God's sakes. I mean, that's legendary. I mean, it really is.
It really was. I mean, when you look at that rivalry, and it's even the fact, I mean, Donovan really cared about that rivalry. Donovan even, like, knew Spanish. Like, like some people
they would talk like
he went out of his way to know Spanish.
Yeah, like he wanted to be as involved in this rivalry as he possibly could. I mean, you could tell how much Donovan cared. I mean, he also lived in Southern California, so he kind of had to learn Spanish.
Right.
But at the same point, like, you could tell how much he cared. I mean, he did pee on the field. I mean, it's that effect that we don't really get out of some players at this point.
See, I wish I had that out of Michael Bradley.
Yeah.
Yep.
The guy, the captain of your team, the guy that, you know, basically is the face of the U.S. men's national team, of U.S. soccer, if you will, or one of them. I want that out of him, and you don't get that ever out of him.
You know,
Mike Dempsey is like the leader by example.
Yeah.
He's the legend by example because you're never going to hear him talk about himself. Well, I mean, I don't know, but you're gonna remember his actions more than anything else, and that's why anytime they show him on TV, I feel like he's just like moping around.
Yeah, there was,
and him and Michael Bradley are both the same way. They're shown the same way.
I can't remember who it was, but maybe it was Matt Doyle who tweeted it. It was a video of Kyle Breckman doing an interview. It was saying, we won because we scored more goals than they did, and that had a lot to do with it. It's like these players have been so trained. That's kind of what Michael Bradley, he's trained not to do anything dumb.
I want someone to just speak out. Either against Klinsmann or against how they're playing, and just I need someone to get loud.
Jermaine Jones did that in like 2004, and he still gets burned for it. So he's
I don't
probably
care.
Not gonna be
at
that
this,
guy.
Would you not agree that we need that?
Oh yeah,
saying,
yeah
no. Okay,
I love players.
Abby
like
Wambach
that.
Tried to do that, and that yeah. But I mean,
oh,
if you want to go back to that, she did kind of have a point, which is the same point that we're making. And
it's
she,
the way she said it.
It's the way she said it. She blamed it on foreign players, but.
Yeah, that was a really dumb thing for her to
say.
Yeah,
I mean, obviously, I'm not saying I agree with what she said, but what she was probably trying to say was that they just don't have that extra little oomph, the little grit that you have to win in, you know, CONCACAF and really anything in international soccer.
You don't hear about the losses or the bad performances if you're overseas.
Exactly.
Or you can get away from it. You don't have to listen to it.
Yeah, for my one Arsenal reference for the day, you look at somebody like Jack Wilshere, who is possibly one of the least – he does not care – what he does, I mean, he's got caught smoking a few times, but when he plays for Arsenal, you know how much he loves the club. You hear him singing drunk on top of a bus about Tottenham, and you see the
some
passion.
Some sort of poo reference.
Yeah, that reference. And you see how much he cares. He doesn't care. He cares about Arsenal. And he's obviously not the captain. You're not going to see Michael Bradley doing anything like that, obviously. He probably shouldn't do stuff like that. Probably a little too far.
No, that's what I'd want to see. I don't want to see that in anyone, but I just want Dempsey or Michael Bradley just to be more vocal. I want them to be.
Well, and you also have.
I just want to see someone act like they care. I mean, I know they do. It's not. I'm not trying to say that they don't care. You just don't see it as visually as you'd hope to or want to, or you know, everything's so. We joke about the big joke around here. We're in the 680 radio station tower over here. The big joke around here is that, you know, the Atlanta Falcons are so business. They're so cookie cutter. They're so, you know, towing the company line. That's just how I feel about that's exactly how I feel about the U.S. men's national team with all the players. And I wish someone would just shake them, just tell us how you feel. Just
give us some raw emotion.
Look at what happened with France in the 2010 World Cup. Their team chemistry, everything went to crap because they hated playing for their manager. And his name escapes me right now,
Was it Blanc or no?
No, it's the guy before him. His name escapes me, but everybody hated playing for him. And so guys like Patrice Evra stood up and said something about it, and they got sent home. Yeah. But look at where France is right now. If not the favorite, one of the favorites to win Euro 2016 this summer, and probably one of the favorites at the World Cup in 2018, because they realized that what was going on was terrible. And so those players revolted against that coach, and it's worked now. It's got them going in the direction they needed to go.
And you know, a lot of it could just be complacency. And it's like we were just talking about a few minutes ago about the talent pool and no way pushing these guys out. You know, at some point, if
Raymond Dominic, by the way, was the coach. But
yeah, if you get in a position where you're granted it and you don't have to fight for it, and it's just kind of you kind of get stuck being complacent, going through the motions, and I think that's a lot of what's going on with the U.S. national team. You know, you look at Michael Bradley. I can only point to what I saw last year when I saw them in person at the Georgia Dome. Like, there was no rallying cry to come back. Like, it just never...
No, once they went down, 2-0, the game was over.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, if you put the 2002 team or even something like the Eric Winaldas, the
Joe Max Moores,
guys, they had that U.S. spirit about them to where they would fight back and overcome.
Never give up, never surrender. This team doesn't have that.
No, and it's... I don't think it's, you know, I don't think it's necessarily Klinsmann's fault. I just think it's the personality of the team.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
Well, it's what we get back to talking about Michael Bradley there. You know, it's just that for your team captain to not do anything motivating, you know what I mean? Like you always hear lead by example.
To be fair, anything motivating that we can see.
Well, of course. Yeah.
On the field.
You're right. But even then, like even in interviews and stuff like that, he's just not a overly passionate guy. And I'm not saying you have to have that from your team captain, but you've got to have it from somewhere on the team.
And I mean, part of it is it's just not his personality, so maybe we shouldn't be looking to him.
No.
But
somebody else has to
somebody's
step in.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, and you know, whether that's a Jermaine Jones, whether that's somebody, you know, more one of the more fiery guys, I don't know, but we'll jump to a more controversial topic here really quickly before we kind of get onto what we actually think this team could do at this tournament and the Copa America. And that's I did want to hit on the Jordan Morris just being left off. I don't understand it. I don't know why. Wondolowski scores in droves in MLS, but we've seen that he just doesn't do anything when he's called up to the U.S. men's national team. I mean, it's really hard to forget the sitter that he missed against Belgium, and I thought that after that we might never see him again. And just because, you know, I understand coaches can't make roster choices based on what the fans want and don't want, but that was one where I almost thought, all right, it might be better if you just kind of put him in the rearview mirror, because that's what it's been. He scores a lot in MLS, but you never get anything from him really on the U.S. men's national team level. And as we talked about, why are you calling Wondolowski on there, who we all know is not going to be on the World Cup roster in 2018 unless something bad happens, or well, you know, there's a lot of injuries.
You never know what could happen.
That's a good point.
He only be like 36, right?
He shouldn't be World Cup roster, but why would you put him on there over Jordan Morris?
I mean, the only thing I can really think of is I do wonder what people would think of Wando if the whole Belgium miss hadn't happened, because you look at his career, that's what he was known for. He was known for poaching. He was known for scoring goals.
He's still known for that.
Exactly. And, I mean, that Belgian miss gets stuck in our head, and, I mean, it's probably never not going to be.
Trust me, you type Wondolowski into Google, what I just did, and what do you think the first thing is? Wondolowski miss. And Wondolowski miss GIF is the second thing.
So you wonder, the only thing I can think of that Klinsmann was thinking of is you're probably going to end up starting Bobby Wood, Dempsey, Zardes, one of those. When you're having somebody come off the bench, obviously Jordan Morris has the pace, but you're looking for a goal when we're down by one, we're really pressuring, pace doesn't matter as much. And maybe he's, again, I'm just defending trying to defend Klinsmann here, but maybe he is trying to think, okay, who am I going to put to try to finish a header at the end of the game? Who am I going to put to get a really scrappy goal? And I guess that is where he's thinking Wando could be useful as compared to other guys. I mean, you have speed with, I mean, you have Pulisic, you have Bobby Woods fast. You have some speed. Maybe he's just trying to bring something different.
And, I mean, you know, Jordan Morris has played how many professional soccer games? 10?
He has
13,
been in,
you know?
He has been in good form, but and, at the same
but
time.
But he was
yeah.
getting caps
yeah,
when he was in college.
Anything, yeah, if you're going to bring him in college, then what is a pro career? And he's, if anything, he's doing amazing now.
Yeah, that is yeah. true. I was just saying, I guess you're kind of maybe sending a message to him saying, hey, you know, you're not guaranteed a spot, or maybe it's what you brought up earlier saying, you know, hey, Jurgen Klinsmann is trying to punish him for staying in the MLS. Or
which is so stupid.
Like, again, we're struggling for reasons. At the end of the day, we really do think that Jordan Morris should be on this team. We're trying to get into the mind of Jurgen Klinsmann. And my friend over here pretty much just had a mini freak out because of that. But yeah, I mean, that's just trying to get into the mind of Klinsmann. You do wonder why Jordan Morris isn't on this team. I mean, he's been in good form. He has this pace. He's young. He's what you want to see in somebody. You want to bring him to a big experience tournament. You do wonder why he's not there.
Yeah, it's just a head scratcher. It really is. We'll jump right now. We got a question on Twitter, actually, and it obviously has to do with this Copa America Centenario. Aiden tweets into us. He says, "What's a realistic goal in y'all's opinion for the Copa America?"
Getting out of the group stage.
I mean, yeah, it's kind of like the World Cup.
Playing four games?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like the World Cup. Your goal is to get out of the group stage, and even though our group's not as good, that is kind of, if we do that, I will be, I guess, as impressed as I'm going to be with this team.
Yeah, and I just think that, obviously, that is a should be what you want to do, obviously, in any tournament, is get out of the group stage. Now, to go from expectation to what we actually think is going to happen, what will this team do? Are they getting out? I don't think so.
I think they have to keep it manageable against Colombia. Have to. Whether it's just a 2-0. They can't
get outscored by a lot and put themselves in a situation
much
where they
like
have to.
Much like Portugal against Germany.
Yeah, where they had to score like, you know, a bazillion goals to get through, yeah.
The key game is obviously the Costa Rica game.
Mm. And let's not forget, this Costa Rica team did do pretty well at the last World Cup.
And they got my boy Joel Campbell on the team, so
yeah.
Assuming he made the roster. I haven't checked their roster, but I assume he's on there.
I was going to say, Costa Rica's probably not in a position where they're leaving Joel Campbell off.
But, yeah, that's a key game. Obviously, you can't slip up against, who is it, Paraguay?
Yeah, Paraguay.
Yeah, can't slip up against Paraguay.
And that's the thing. Paraguay's been really good in the past, but this is a spell right now where they're just not, they're not great. You know, there's no Roque Santa Cruz walking through the door for them right now.
But, again, so you compare it to the World Cup group, that is the Ghana, where they're probably our easiest opponent, but that doesn't mean they're easy by any means.
Of course not.
And
this is the U.S. we're talking about.
Oh, exactly.
But here's the thing. If this were the World Cup, I'd say, yeah, they get through. But because it's a tournament where, if nothing else, the thought has creeped through their mind that this tournament ultimately means nothing.
It means nothing, yeah.
But
here's the thing.
I worry about their success in this tournament.
The USA plays up at World Cups. We've seen that. I mean, not every World Cup.
It being in the United States should help. Granted, it didn't really help much with the Gold Cup last year. But I think it...
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys, for letting Atlanta probably never get a U.S. men's national team game again.
Yeah, I know, right?
I would hope not.
It's not Atlanta's fault. We're not taking the heat for that one.
But, yeah, maybe it's a redemption story kind of thing. I mean, I'm just kind of grasping it at soft factors, if you will.
Right.
Not really anything tactically, but...
Because we don't know really what we're going to get tactically from game to game with this team.
That's also true.
And you do wonder if maybe Klinsmann is feeling a little pressure, if there is any pressure there, but by his one kind of boss who's not going to fire him. But and it's kind of wonder, like, if he does feel that pressure, maybe he does really push this team. But again, it's does he feel the pressure to really do well in this tournament? Because it could end up in a thing where it's we don't have that much motivation for it.
See, I don't think he will. I think he wants to obviously do well, but I don't think his mindset isn't. Oh, well, then again, why would you bring? See, I go back and forth because I think I don't think
that's
he's,
what you have to do with Jordan Klinsmann.
I don't think
that
I don't
make sense.
I don't think it's a big. I think maybe he doesn't think it's a big deal, and he's looking at this opportunity to play good teams and develop players. But he didn't bring players to develop, so he's looking to win now. But at the same time, he tells you that this is a So you just go in circles.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's how it's been for the past 6 years with Jurgen. That's how it's been with the past 5-6 years with Jurgen Klinsmann. It's been a consistent theme behind him. Why is he making the decisions he's making? It's not like he's given us – I mean, he got us out of the World Cup group, but it's not like he's given us that much return on what we've wanted. And, I mean, the thing is, he is the technical director of U.S. soccer as well as the head coach of the U.S. men's national team. Who is the only person that can fire him is Sunil Gulati, who is just not going to do that because of the massive payout we would have to give him.
Well, it's not just a massive payout. It's the fact that, you know, they went for Klinsmann right after the 06 World Cup, didn't get him, went back to that well. So he's thrown all his eggs in the Klinsmann basket. So, I mean, I even think that, and we can get into the what we think should happen to Klinsmann, you know, next, but I don't even necessarily know if an 0-for-3 showing and getting bounced in the first round gets him out, because I think Gulati has put everything into we're keeping this guy through the 2018 World Cup.
Here's the thing I'll say is just looking at Colombia, Costa Rica, and Paraguay, these teams will beat each other up.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not like Colombia's not going to run away with this thing. Costa Rica has a chance to advance.
You say that about Colombia.
Here's the thing. It's not the same.
Again, I don't think they go against it's going to be a lot tougher game than I think people realize, especially Colombia, Paraguay, and Colombia, Costa Rica. It's not going to be – for Colombia, that's not going to be the easiest game in the world. Neither – I mean, obviously for Costa Rica or Paraguay. But if we – here's the thing. If we advance, then we're all going to be like, yay, we advanced to the knockout stage.
Right.
Brazil. It's still – I mean, we advanced to the knockout stage of the World Cup, and we still look like crap.
Oh, yeah.
The entire group stage. So it's all a matter of perspective.
Here's one thing. That Colombia team is not the same Colombia team we watched 2 years ago at the World Cup.
Yeah, James is definitely not.
I mean, James has barely touched the field for Madrid towards the end of this last season.
Yeah, Zidane does not like him.
Yeah, I mean Cuadrado is probably a little better. I mean, Falcao's still a non-factor whatsoever when you
look
at
it. They still got, was it Baca for AC Milan? And they got Jackson Martinez, I guess. So, I mean, they still got
who knows how he's doing.
I mean, they still got some players. And another thing I was going to bring up, it's even if we get past the group stage – if we play terrible soccer like the World Cup, I'm still not going to be happy.
Yeah,
if
what's
go
the
one
point? Yeah.
Because, I mean, we were actually looking at the 2014 roster, and it's like, even with 2 years to, you know, look back at it, it still was a lot of poor decisions. Like, I just, not taking Eddie Johnson, not taking a couple other guys. Obviously, Landon Donovan is the one we talk about.
Ugh.
But the lineup that we had a 4-3-3. And absolutely no speed on the wings. We put Graham Zusi and Alejandro Bedoya on the wings.
And Brad Davis.
Brad Davis. Even more speed. And we expected to possess the ball, and we just didn't. So it's like I want us to actually have some type of game plan going in and execute it, something, and then actually maybe possess the ball or do something that'll give me hope going forward and not just play kickball and somehow get through.
Serious question. Was the omission of Landon Donovan, if that didn't happen, are U.S. soccer fans and even us in this room talking about Jurgen Klinsmann the way we are right now?
I mean, I do think so, because even besides Landon Donovan, you look at what he's promised us in the way we're supposed to be playing our soccer right now.
We're supposed to be playing that more
we're supposed
you know,
to be, and
passing
we're,
style,
we're
you know, more possession-based. Yeah,
our best soccer has been counterattack. I mean, you look at Bob Bradley, who played that counterattack, and he was proud of it. He did it. He set his teams up to do that.
There's nothing wrong with playing counterattacking football if that's what you're good
again,
at.
I mean, obviously, Bob Bradley definitely had his faults too, but at least he was honest with us in what he was trying to do. We knew that he was trying to play counterattack because we didn't necessarily have the best players in the world.
And we were set up with guys like Dempsey and Donovan to excel at the counterattack.
We played
Look at
to
how
our
they
strengths.
Got through against Algeria.
Yeah.
That last goal was one of the best examples of counterattacking I've ever seen in my life.
The thing is, even under the Klinsmann reign, our best soccer has been under the counterattack. And he's like, but he's given us no indication of how he wants to play.
No, I piggybacking on your thing. I've said this for months now. I don't want to develop a new system of play. I don't want to develop beautiful soccer. I want to be the best counterattacking international team in the world.
I agree.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
I don't care
at,
about anything else
success.
Other than nailing that down, utilizing that, because that seems to be the only way you're forced to play. When it comes to CONCACAF play, and basically whenever we get into the World Cup, that's essentially what the U.S. men's national team is reduced to. So why not just accept it, be the best counterattacking team, be the Leicester City of international football?
I think our defenders are better with that hunker-down mentality as opposed to if you're trying to play possession-style football or soccer or whatever you want to call it. I get caught in that trap a lot. But if you're trying to play possession-style – you need defenders that are technically good on the ball because they're going to have to pass around too, and the USA just doesn't have that. And whereas you had the guys like Oguchi Onyewu even succeeding in the counterattacking style because all they had to do was boss around and get the ball out of the defense as quickly as possible.
And with the young crop of forwards we have guys to play that. Mm-hmm. Like Zardes, Wood,
yes,
Jordan Morris, they're just designed to play attacking football.
Pulisic too.
Yeah, Pulisic too, to play that 10 role where he really gets to get in space and run at people. That's speed right there. But we're trying to pass the ball around, you know? And as much as I like watching, you know, teams like Barcelona and Arsenal play, I feel like fans and managers, they look at, you know, Barcelona 2010, 2011, it's like, okay, let's play like that.
But no need to turn into like a Chelsea or Atleti Madrid where they do nothing but like bunker down. It's not pretty to watch at all, but there's a good balance.
There's a balance, totally.
Do y'all think that when Klinsmann took this job, he knew what he was getting into?
No, of course not. He took the job because he lives in California and that his family was growing up in the United States. He took the job out of convenience.
I don't know if it's that simplistic, because if you read his new book or the new book that's out about him, they talk about how he loves living in the United States and he desperately wants soccer to succeed.
Well, I'm sure he wanted to be the guy that took U.S. soccer to that next level.
He wanted to be
that.
the savior, but it was
genius. Also out of convenience. I mean, I think you could have, you know, say he was living in, you know, Ecuador or, you know, Bolivia or somewhere like that. And he loved that place. I'm sure he probably would have taken that job if they had offered him enough money. Just because, you know, it's about building a nation and building a team, and I get that. But like you said, he does love living here, and he wants to be the guy, or you know, one of the guys that's, man, remember back when soccer was terrible in the USA? Who was the guy that really made it a thing? Oh, Jurgen Klinsmann. Yeah, of course he wants that. I think anybody would want that. But at the same time, I do think that there was a certain level of, man, I can take this job, and it's just right down the street from me.
And I think he really thought that he was like, oh, I had success in England, I had success in Germany, I won a World Cup. I'm going to come to America, walk on the land, and just turn everything around.
Right.
And I think he's finding out now that he can't just grow players on trees like Germany.
Exactly.
I will say, in the new book, which is incredibly biased towards Klinsmann.
Imagine that.
So if you can get over that, read it. But it did mention that he got the same kind of hate when he was transforming German soccer.
Oh, yeah, that 06 World Cup.
He transformed the mindset of Germany. Jogi Löw was doing
no,
all
no, no,
of
no,
the
right,
work.
Right, right, right. But the point is, he was getting the same kind of heat when he was doing what he's doing now.
Didn't they hate him in 06?
Yes.
Because that German team in 06, and I keep joking with Aaron and William about this, it's amazing to look at Germany's track records in big tournaments. Like, it is astounding. And that team wasn't even supposed to be that good.
Well, one thing that he did, though, was, and this goes back to, you know, history and stuff like that, but ever since after World War II, when Germany basically got decimated and handed off for parts to people, you know, West Germany one side, East Germany one side, nationalism in Germany was dead because they didn't feel they could be proud of being German. You know, obviously Nazis and everything, it was a very checkered past there. One thing Klinsmann did was re-energize the country, and I mean, being there for that tournament, you really saw for the first time since the Second World War, people were out in the streets proud to be German, and that's what Klinsmann did. That's what Klinsmann is. He's big picture, but he's not technical, small picture, detail oriented guy. He's big picture, broad ideas.
Well, and that goes to show you that the systems were in place in Germany for him to succeed.
Mm-hmm. Well, America, when you have Thomas Müller burst onto the scene and you know, score, I think, 5 or 6 goals in that one tournament. So.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at going on a bigger picture, if you look at how the youth soccer levels, like how they're organized or lack of organization, and just it's a cluster F, if you will. It's just not... It's not anything like it is in Europe.
I don't know why I mentioned Thomas Müller. I think I was thinking Podolski. But when those guys burst onto the scene and you had your Podolskis and Schweinsteiger, that was when those guys – I know Müller was 2010. But still, I mean, you had this great young wave of players come through in 2006, and that only got better with Ozil and Müller and Kadira and those guys in 2010. So, but Klinsmann definitely laid the groundwork for that.
Tell me if I'm wrong, but I just believe a lot of success of national teams comes down to luck. I mean, I don't think Germany had anything to do with Lukas Podolski or Mesut Ozil, because they're not even born in Germany.
Oh, they're Polish.
So,
or Polish and Turkish, respectively.
But I feel like, you know, crediting him for the success of Germany now is kind of a stretch.
Oh, it's a stretch now, and, for sure.
But also blaming
him. I told
him,
you the book was very biased.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, but also blaming him for failures in the United States soccer system is going to be a stretch. Mm-hmm. And then a coach can only do so much, I believe, when it comes to really building up a program, because you have to have that organic soccer or football, you know, just that system set up, you know.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, Klinsmann, for that German setup in 06, he was the big picture idea guy, but the technical, you know, the way they played and everything, that was all Yogi Löw. And, I mean, that was – so Klinsmann doesn't have that. He doesn't have that really great number two.
And that's – I guess that's kind of the point I was trying to make with, do we think that Klinsmann knew what he was getting himself into when he took the American job?
Well, I mean, if he had had Yogi Löw with him as his number two when he started this job, you know, maybe we'd be in a different spot.
I think it's more the technical director role that he had in Germany more than anything else. When it comes to how he changed everything there, and I mean, he's got that role here, but
he just doesn't have as good of minds working with him here.
Well, no, he's got to start from ground zero.
I think America is just full of people that think they know. Like, we Americanize everything. Like, yeah. Oh, we have a way of doing it that's going to be totally different, even though there's been evidence of 100 years of soccer, and it's worked out perfectly for them.
And that's why I'm so happy that Atlanta United went and got Darren Eales, and we've got, you know, guys that know how academy systems have been successful overseas, and that the United, we're not so much trying to do it America's way or whatever. And that's why I think Atlanta United has done a great job there. And unfortunately, I think that's one of the big things Klinsmann whiffed on when he took the job initially, was that he didn't surround himself with enough outside of the U.S. perspective. And I think that really kind of handicapped him a lot from the beginning.
All right, before we get too off track, the winners of Group A play the winners of Group B. That would mean we either face Group B is Brazil, Ecuador, Haiti, and Peru. I'm assuming it's going to be Brazil and Ecuador.
And we're done.
Well, if we face Brazil, I'd say, yeah, it's going to be a tough, tough quarterfinal match. But
look, Ecuador wouldn't be the easiest.
But here's the thing. We're about to play them on Wednesday. What do you guys want to see? Knowing that that could be a potential matchup in the quarterfinals, what do you guys want to see out of this match on Wednesday?
I want to see our fullbacks handle the Valencias. I mean, you look at when we play Colombia, Cuadrado on a wing, he can tear people up. He can tear some fullbacks up.
Jefferson Montero, too.
Oh, Jefferson Montero,
too. You've got Montero and Valencia on either side, and then you've got Ener Valencia, the striker, up top. I mean, the speed that Ecuador can hit you with is very impressive.
I want to see how they handle that, if they can handle the pace. Cause, I mean, obviously, you think of Yedlin, you think of him as an attacking fullback, whereas we're going to really need to see him be defensive, which he did with Sunderland. So we know it's possible. I want to see if they can contain them, if they can keep them out wide now that they get crosses in, if they can not let them just completely juke them out and cut in, if they can really handle that pressure.
Yeah, if it's Brazil, we're just giving up, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I will say this. This Brazil squad is not the best Brazil
squad
I've ever
seen. If there ever was a beatable Brazil squad, it's this one without Neymar. I mean, I could still see us sitting back a little bit, and if we actually, you know, maybe Klinsmann actually decides to get a little bit pragmatic and say, hey, we're going to sit back. We're really going to actually focus on counterattacking. Brazil's a beatable team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, who's going to play in their back four? I mean, they have some players, but as we've seen,
their
you
focus is more on the Olympics.
Yes, the focus is more on the Olympics, and even their first team back four, you know, after the Olympics, they just were not as good.
No, you're totally right. So I think that, you know, it's not the worst position for U.S. soccer to be in, but I also just, it feels like even though we're trying to talk ourselves into this Brazil team as beatable, that's when the U.S. sets itself up to get beat like 4-0.
I just want these games to be not blowouts.
I worry about the Colombia game.
Yeah, me
really
too.
Do.
And then if we end up having to play Ecuador or Brazil, honestly, I worry about that final score. Even though you guys, we just mentioned it's going to be a beatable team. Still, the last time they played Brazil just is not. It's not gonna. It didn't leave a good taste in our mouth.
Would y'all rather play Colombia first, or would you have rather them play, get over a game like a Paraguay or Costa Rica or someone like that?
Well, I always like in like a tournament like this, playing the best team in the group last, because you never know what's going to happen. Look at Germany, for example. You know, they had already procured advancement into the next round down in Brazil. So we didn't get the best. They still beat the United States, but it wasn't like embarrassing. You know what I mean? Right. That wasn't Germany playing at their best.
They were just kind of out for a knockabout.
Exactly. Whereas, game one, you're going to get the best out of Colombia. I mean, game one is when you're going to see somebody's best, and then obviously once you get into the knockout rounds, that's when you're getting them back at their best. But, yeah, I mean, game one is going to be a really tough task to face Colombia off the bat.
Here's what I worry about, a 06 Czech Republic kind of performance.
You guys keep bringing up really terrible memories. I was in the stadium for that. I saw Jan Koller rise up and just smash the header zone. And then Thomas Rosicky, who you guys know very well being Arsenal fans, or know him for being off the field more than on the field, I guess.
Man, that was one of the best goals I've ever seen. Just
two of them.
Yeah.
He scored two firecrackers there were just that Casey Keller had no chance to save.
It was one of the worst performances from a U.S. soccer team that
awful.
I've ever seen.
Awful.
Yeah. I do really do hate how negative we are being about the current state of U.S. soccer. We obviously
we want to be positive.
We keep going back. I mean, it's a thing of at what point are we going to actually turn around? Because we love this team. All five of us here, we absolutely love watching U.S. soccer.
Guys earlier about how much money I've spent on U.S. soccer within the last, 2 months. So, yeah.
The reason we're talking about it is just, it's just how the state of things is. We want to see things get better. It's not like we enjoy talking negative. We'd much rather be talking about how we're going to go into this tournament and really have a chance against Brazil, really have a chance against the Colombias of the world. But we just can't right now, and I'm ready to see a day when we actually do turn this around. I wonder what it's going to take for that.
Yeah, and I think a big worry is the U.S. soccer fans having a false sense of optimism, which we tend to do in these tournaments, and it kind of has an even more negative backlash after the fact when they don't live up to the superseded expectations that we place on ourselves.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I am an eternal optimist, when it comes to sports teams. I still think Atlanta could win a championship one day.
Gosh, come on.
Exactly.
Too far.
I am such an optimist. I still feel okay, we're going to get out of this group. So I have to look at the positive. Even for me right now, it's kind of hard. And I just do wonder, I think a lot of this will, after this Colombia game, is going to tell us a lot. And because after that, we're going to either, if this Colombia game goes bad, I'm really scared. If we even get a draw or we get a not bad result, that's why it's so important, because we still have two games after that to try to get through. We have Paraguay and Costa Rica after that. If we get knocked out, it's going to kill our spirits.
You can't be embarrassed on your home soil.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why the Colombia game is so important. Even if they lose, you got to come out and at least play respectably.
Where is that game?
That's at the Levi Stadium in Santa Clara.
Yeah,
the 49ers.
That's one thing I was going to bring up. The good thing is that, one game in Philadelphia, you got one game in Santa Clara. Santa Clara might be more of a 50-50 in terms of U.S. to Colombia fans. And then where's the other one played?
Hartsford, maybe?
That's why this tournament's so weird. It's not regionally
Soldier
zoned.
Field.
Flying across the country. I'm okay. Brazil's got a game at the Rose Bowl. Then they got one in Orlando. I'm y'all couldn't have, kept them.
It's definitely about, that part's just about as many people in the United States being able to see all these teams.
Of course. No, I get it. No, but anyway, before we let you guys go, we really thank you for coming in here.
Can we put you guys on the record? Sorry, what were you saying? Can we put you on the record for what you guys think the ultimate result is going to be for the U.S. men's national team? How do they fare throughout this tournament?
Being the eternal optimist, I say a competitive, but 2-0, maybe even a 3-1 loss to Colombia. Mm-hmm. We'll beat Costa Rica and Paraguay and then ultimately lose Brazil. And hopefully that's a close game. I don't necessarily think it will be, but, who really knows how this tournament's going to go out.
Yeah, kind of on the same lines as Andrew in this. It's just, I do see us squeaking out. Again, I am very, very much an optimist. I see us getting through and knockout stages. I do think we're going to probably lose in the first round of the knockout stages, but I'm always going to have that hope.
Yeah, I have to agree. I mean, as much as I'd love to see, you know, Wando score 7 goals, and I just don't see it happening. Personally, I don't think we're a better team than Costa Rica, but I'm not going to, you know, I could see us getting out of the group, maybe winning a game if we avoid Brazil in the first round, but we've got to temper our expectations.
We could play over our skis. We could win this group. I mean, that the U.S. has proven in the past they could win this group. They should at least finish second in this group. Will they? I would say yes right now. I think they get out of the first round, but it's very much as easy to say they could also not make it out of the first round.
Any chance we can get Costa Rica in the snow?
Oh, that'd be great, right?
How pissed off would they be?
If somebody just came in the night before and just like brought like snow blowers all around and just blasted the field with snow.
Yeah,
before
it'll like torrential downpour. They'll be playing in mud.
Hey, we could use that same pitch we played on in Puerto Rico for the Colombia game, you know, just start playing kickball.
Well, it's like I was saying, that stadium in Santa Clara isn't known for having the best field. So maybe that
was strategic.
Yeah, maybe it was strategy there indeed. Well, guys from the U.S. Soccer Feed, it's at U.S. Soccer Feed on Twitter. Andrew Marsh, Aaron Anthony, William Orr, thank you guys so much for joining us. Any parting shots?
No, we had a lot of fun. We should do this again sometime.
We might just make this a regular U.S. men's national team whenever they have a friendly coming up or anything like that. Maybe during the Copa America we guys have you on. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, this has been a lot
of fun. We'll talk about it after the show.
Good.
All right. Well, this has been another exciting edition of the Mouths of the South podcast, the U.S. Soccer Special Edition. Don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter at MOTS Podcast. He's at EricQuintana47. I'm at Sam J. Franco. Also, go over to DirtySouthSoccer.com for all the latest on all things Atlanta United and Atlanta soccer. Follow on Twitter at DirtySouthSock. That's DirtySouth, S-O-C. Once again, thank you to Conrad Burry for our amazing new logo. If you haven't seen it yet, check it out.
The game on Wednesday is at 8 o'clock. 8 o'clock, I'm trying to find.
Yes, Ecuador, USA, 8 p.m. I believe it's on
FS1.
Yeah, FS1.
Okay.
FS1,
they keep jumping all around the place. Nope, you never know these games are going to be. Yeah, Puerto Rico's FS1. I believe it's ESPN.
ESPN 2. Yeah, okay. ESPN 2.
Okay. One of the worldwide leader.
7 p.m. Yeah, 8 p.m. Central. 8 p.m. Eastern.
Get a little Ian Dark. So, hey, there's something to look forward to there. So, looking forward to watching U.S. soccer, although it always rips my heart apart when my two nations of origin play against each other. But we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Thank you guys from U.S. Soccer Feed for joining us. Thank all of you out there for listening to us. Once again, this has been another exciting edition of the Mouths of the South podcast. ATL, we will talk to you later.
See ya.